Hi, and welcome to the Vancouver Life Podcast.
This podcast is created to answer the most talked about questions when it comes to navigating the Vancouver real estate market.
I'm your host, Dan Wortel, a licensed agent and accredited real estate investment advisor based here in Vancouver, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Dash.
Hi, Dan. I'm also a local realtor, an exhausted father of two, husband of one, and really happy to be here.
Let's get right into today's episode. Immigration has been running hot in Canada for years, and this week, the immigration minister came out and announced caps on the nation's future growth rate. Trudeau has also come forward announcing a renter's bill of rights, and we're going to dive into each of these and discuss how they will affect housing supply and the rental market. And these changes will, of course, change the housing landscape for many, including and especially condo investors. And they may want to reevaluate their portfolio ahead of these changes. So if you own investment properties, book a meeting with us using that link below, and we'll talk about how you can best position yourself ahead of these changes. Now let's dive into the immigration announcement this week because it is big. The immigration minister did announce last week that the country will begin capping growth targets. You've likely heard that Canada's been growing at the rate of about 1.2 million people per year for the past couple of years. This is largely based on the amount of temporary foreign workers and foreign students that entered the country, somewhere in around the amount of 800,000 per year. This has put tremendous pressure on the rental market in particular, where the country has seen rental rates hit an all-time high nationally, up 8% just this last year over year, and we're up about 30% since the pre-pandemic era. When you pull up the chart and you lay over the rate of non-PR immigration with rental rates, they are practically in lockstep. Non-PRs clearly help contribute to the increase in rental rates. It's supply and demand. It's kind of obvious, but I didn't realize how correlated those two metrics actually are. If we look back, non-permanent residents made up about 0.5% of Canada's population dating back to 1975. Fast forward to the year 2000, and that number had increased to 1%. Fast forward to pre-pandemic 2020, it had jumped to 3%, but then just 4 years later, that number is now 6%. The rate of adding almost 200,000 non-PRs every quarter is simply unsustainable. While this seems obvious in hindsight, there were no stopgaps in place to limit this level of immigration. Interesting to note that the government does actually have a hard cap on annual permanent resident admissions, but historically, none for non-PRs. It was just a wide open door and people could come in as they pleased, essentially. And we did see and experience that over the last 3 years. Now, here's a very important fact to consider when we're talking about these caps. Non-PRs are looked upon more favorably for obtaining PR than those who are outside of the country. This means that moving forward, the majority of the new PRs to Canada are already here. So this will dramatically shift the rate of population growth in this country. Remember, the rate of natural population growth in our country is dropping dramatically. I mean, you only have to go back to about 2010, where that natural growth was 140,000 per year. Today, it's closer to 20,000. That is dropping very quickly. So ultimately, the net effect will be much lower population growth since the majority of new permanent residents will simply be a reclassification of people who already live in Canada. So the Fed announced that they'll be cutting these temporary residents, these non-PRs, the current population, by 20% over the next 3 years. What does that look like in a numbers valuation here? That's a cut of 500,000 people, 500,000 people. This means the share of Canada's total population of non-PRs, which is currently at 6.2%, will drop to 5%. In classic government policy tradition, this move is happening, quote unquote, too late and after the natural effects are already resulting in a turnover of this metric, right? It took blow off top home prices and blow off top rental prices to say, oh, wait a minute, maybe 1.2 million per year is too much. And here we are looking backwards once again. But as mentioned, so this kind of natural effect of this number turning over has already begun. And some examples of that are that PR applications are down 50% year over year as of January, which is continuing on a sharply lower applicant trend in the recent months. the cost of living and affordability in this country that we all face is basically the word is out, and it's making it back to these countries where people are ultimately deciding not to come here at the rate they obviously did over the past 3 years when times were quote unquote better. Student visas are way down as well, dropping 42% year over year in January prior to the announcement to cap the student visa amounts as well. So this phase out of non-PRs will have a dramatic effect on Canada's total population growth. By this time next year, that growth rate will drop from 3.2% down to just 0.8% and probably taper to around 0.7% by the year 2027. That amount, 0.7, is around half of the growth rate we saw in the pre-COVID years. And ultimately, that's going to like represent major headwinds when it comes to economic growth moving forward. On a potential positive side, the rental market will cool significantly. Lower demand will soften prices. And remember, we have a record number of purpose-built condos in the pipeline. There's about 220,000 being built today for renters. But of course, with all of the increased taxes we've seen just this year alone within in British Columbia, the removal of essentially Airbnb rules and a forecast of lowering rent, well, obviously investors may move out of the condos and into maybe some other assets where they're going to get a higher return. When we look to investors, right now they're actually about 27% of all the new homes purchased are to investors. And that's because it used to be a very attractive asset. Because if we look back 9 years ago, that number was only 19%. So a dramatic increase in investors buying homes over that last almost decade here. But this landscape, as mentioned earlier, for real estate investors is becoming less and less attractive. And this may lead to a much needed increase in inventory as investors offload some of these condos that aren't giving them the returns they used to. Remember, buying a condo today in Toronto, I think you average something like minus $1,200 in cash flow. It's brutal. Do note that this announcement to lower population growth targets dramatically increases the likelihood of interest rate cuts later this year and through 2025, okay? Because the impact on economic growth will be substantial and the Bank of Canada will have to stimulate once again. And they will do that by lowering rates. Of course, it's to be seen how much this new policy will actually take effect, right? It's much easier to pass a law than it is to enforce it. So will they act quickly? Will their targets actually be hit? How quickly will the economy change? All to be seen, but definitely note this is a dramatic change in what we're going to see for Canada's population growth for at least the foreseeable future.
What a roller coaster ride. Yeah, it's even when we were doing, or even when we had immigration numbers of, say, 300,000 people, we didn't exactly have a whole lot of supply then either. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of crazy to go through these motions where we're just on the throttle, then off the throttle, then on the throttle, all dealing with latent, you know, information. And instead of, like, again, like I've always said on the pod, instead of having like a comprehensive overarching plan about how we're going to move forward as a country, it's just this oops, too much, oops, oh, not enough. And then, you know, it's just this gear changing all the time, which is not an environment where a lot of people want to invest or a lot of, it's why we're seeing, you know, a 50% reduction in PRs. It's not just coming from our own government that's going to be capping these, is coming from around the world. Canada isn't what it used to be. And it's just not the same attractive country considering the cost of living here, which doesn't justify it. It just simply doesn't. There's other places in the world. And you know, you can see that when you don't deal with the fundamentals inside of the supply demand economics, and you have the governments just coming out with different rights. This government renters bill of rights, which was announced yesterday, is in place because there's simply not enough housing, and it's been ignored for the last 30 years. And here we are having to do all of this stuff that just seems somewhat unnecessary if we had dealt with the problems and not the symptoms of the problems. But to talk specifically to the government's Renters Bill of Rights, which was announced yesterday, the federal government will now create a new Canadian Renters Bill of Rights, which would require landlords to disclose their property's rental price history to prospective tenants. I'm also not sure how they're going to enforce that, much like you just talked about, Dan. The federal government will create a new renter's bill of rights, which would require landlords to disclose that to all of their prospective tenants. And this is kind of crazy because, you know, Canada's overall vacancy rate fell to 1.5% last year. And alongside it, Trudeau has promised a $15 million fund, another fund. Fun. I'm not sure if that's actually going to result in anything like the last bunch of funds that came out of the federal government, because they've led to where we are today. So the whole premise of the fund is to protect tenants against unfairly rising rent payments, rent evictions, or bad landlords. Those bad, bad landlords, the ones that are providing homes for people to live in. I mean, it's not like it could be maybe the central bank's problem or the fact that we don't have enough housing to support renters. You know, it's somehow it's the nasty landlords that are the problems here. In Canada today, more people are renting than ever, said Trudeau. Nearly two-thirds of young Canadians rent their homes, he said, as if this was news, adding that younger people spend larger portions of their incomes on rent than other generations have. He's been in power for 8 years, and he's just coming to this conclusion like he couldn't see it coming? Maybe young people want to start a family, he said, but they don't know how they can afford something bigger than a one-bedroom apartment. I'm sorry, this is so out of touch with reality. It's unbelievable. On April 16th, we'll also get a new federal budget. And Freeland signaled then that the budget would focus on housing affordability and jobs while balancing the needs to remain fiscally prudent by limiting major new spending plans. The reason because of this is there is no money. You can't keep taxing people and having a per capita GDP that gets less and less and less, with less people becoming productive, meaning less and less taxable revenue. You can't spend the same. And that's what's happening, is too much tax and not enough productivity. Data from CMHC released on Wednesday showed single-family housing starts were down 20% over the last year, while condominium construction has climbed 7%. And get this, David Coletto, the CEO of Abascus Data, a polling company that has done extensive research among younger voters, has said it makes sense for the Liberals to try to get the millennials and Gen Z voters back because the party cannot hold on to power any other way. Coletto's latest data shows that 46% of Gen Z voters are still willing to vote Liberal, but 39% of them have now been backing the Conservatives. And this, I wonder why. Many have felt like they were left behind. Their problems have not been dealt with. They cannot get ahead in today's economy in Canada. In fact, even at the provincial level, there's pushback here. You just have to look to Quebec's ministers who were the first ones to jump to this. Tolerating this new invasion of Quebec's jurisdiction by the federal government, which wants to meddle in our affairs, is out of the question, quote unquote. Housing is a Quebec responsibility. If the federal government really wants to help, let it do its work by reducing the level of temporary immigration and the number of asylum seekers. Right now, they are artificially increasing the demand for housing, and they are causing part of the problem. Two Quebec ministers have emerged to say the plan is unacceptable from Quebec's point of view, and it will formally not only request to opt out of the program, but is now going to seek financial compensation from Ottawa as a result. This is what happens when you address symptoms and you don't go after the fundamental problem.
What they seem to do time and time again, and there was two comments that specifically stood out to me. What does it matter if you see the previous rental price? Okay, let's run through an example of that. Okay, so sure, there's a tenant who's been in a one-bed condo downtown, and that tenant has been in there for 10 years, and there's rent control. So maybe they started at $1,000 a month, and now they're at $1,300 a month, for example, and they leave. And the market rate is $3,000. And so the tenants line up and they go look at this property and they say they like it, fits their budget, et cetera. And they, okay, great. You know, it's $3,000. It used to be $1,300, but you're paying three. And they're like, oh no, I want to pay $1,300. And then they will say no, because where else are you going to go? Because the one next door is $2,950. The one upstairs is $3,100. So you take your pick. It does absolutely nothing to rental rates, disclosing what it was previously. So that is just, in my opinion, lip service that goes absolutely nowhere, but gives the illusion that they're doing something to help renters.
Dan, it's like buyers who are looking at a Vancouver special and that house has not hit the market in 40 years. And the person who owns it spent $198,000 on the house 40 years ago. They might not like the fact that it's now listed at 1.85 or 1.9 million. It's just a reality of where the market's gone. And the market is what dictates price.
Yeah. No, of course it is. And the second thing that really kind of stood out is the quote of it being unfairly rising rental rates. Unfair. Okay. The person in charge of how many people came in the country, how many houses exist in the country. But here we go again. It's not their fault. They never look inwards. Rates are being unfairly increased by the landlords, the people who are providing houses. But we could discuss this ad nauseum, but both of those really stood out to me as, just like you said, completely out of touch. Mm-hmm. But one thing we're not out of touch on is what is happening in the business cycle here, because there's a lot of businesses that are closing and the numbers are getting alarming. So we want to dive into this a bit today. The number of active businesses fell 0.2% in December of last year. It's just the most recent data available. That decrease was driven by the highest number of business closings since June of 2020. Do you remember June of 2020? Businesses were forced to close. You couldn't leave your house, let alone go visit a business. That's how bad the numbers are right now. The six-month change in active businesses in Canada dropped 0.5%. The last time it was this low was Q3 of 2020, again, when businesses were forced to be closed. Well, they're not being forced to close today outside of the fact that they are just financially unfeasible to run. The trend line for this metric is absolutely alarming. Closings are about 10% above pre-pandemic levels and increasing. They've been rising since around January of 2021. And furthermore, we're seeing increased signs of the labor market cooling. EI, or employment insurance claims, rose 4.2% month over month across Canada in January. And particularly of note was the province of Ontario, where EI claims hit a two-year high. Now, it doesn't maybe feel like we have realized a hard landing in this country as of yet, but the pressures are just mounting from every single corner here, it feels like, and the Bank of Canada may have their hand forced earlier than they may like.
Or deeper than they're prepared to talk about. And it just goes to show, you know, the system is more broke than perhaps they're willing to admit, or that they maybe even know. And I think when Canadians find out, they're going to be really pissed. And just to add to how you can see the governments are trying to add revenue everywhere they can to support themselves. Toronto Mayor Olivia Chow has come out and said the city will now want to charge homeowners and businesses for rainwater. The new charge is referred to as a stormwater charge, although many on social media are already calling it a rain tax, since it has to do with stormwater runoff. Still, its recent visibility has many pointing the finger at current Mayor Olivia Chow and has drawn mocking condemnation at home and abroad. Kevin Vuong, an independent MP in Toronto's Fork riding, took to social media to remark, "Seriously, they want to tax the rain?" It feels like every single announcement lately, Dan, is some kind of new tax. And Canada is now becoming the land of the true north, strong and the taxed, you know, to a degree that no longer makes sense. This is nonsensical. And here's how they've even come up with a plan as to how they would charge you, how they would tax you for stormwater. The new charge would be based on how much hard surface exists on a property. Roofs, driveways, or concrete landscaping are all exempt from hard surfaces, which do not absorb water. Why does the city want to do this? The city says it would provide dedicated funding for a dedicated service, meaning they didn't plan on having to upgrade their stormwater the stormwater pipes. And as a result of this, they're now trying to figure out how to deal with all the demand that they've let in without any of the infrastructure. And how are they going to do that? By taxing the water that falls on your roof? This is crazy. This is really problematic as Toronto looks again to tax a resource to create more tax revenue at a time when Canadian per capita GDP is at its lowest in decades. Why are we not looking at ways at investing in research and development that would lead to problem-solving solutions instead of more taxes for Canadians? I keep scratching my head. I don't know what the answer is anymore. It's hard to find solutions to these kinds of ridiculous ideas that are being promoted by our elected officials. I don't know what to tell you, Dan.
Well, prepare for the next one. It's going to be an air tax, and it will be measured by your lung capacity. And you know, we've got really good air here, so why not capitalize on that as well? It's laughable, but yet plausible.
Scary.
So I want to kind of finish up here on supply. Supply has always been an issue here for decades here. And now with the population cap coming into play, how is that going to affect housing supply in our country here? So if they do kind of pan out, Canada will see population increase pull back to about 300,000 per year compared to the 1.2 million, four times what it is now. So 300K per year, that's much more in line of what it was pre-pandemic, kind of like 2010 to 2016 era. But if you were around then, you kind of remember that housing supply was not exactly in excess at that time either. So yes, the lower growth will help the rental market. We'll probably see rental rates drop from the 8% annually we're experiencing now to more like inflation, like a 3% annualized increase in rental rates. It will do absolutely nothing for the shortage of single family homes, though, for example, because single family homes starts, new homes being constructed are at the lowest they've been in 34 years. And that number is going to fall further based on the permit, like the building permit data that we already have. Condos, they might get interesting, though. For example, in Toronto, sales of condos lead starts, building starts of condos by 18 months. And that's kind of obvious when you realize that pre-sales, pre-construction sales of condos dominate the market over there. So new condo sales, pre-construction condo sales have dropped 50% year over year to about 12,000 in Toronto. That's a 14-year low. Meanwhile, starts are near their all-time high right now at 30,000. Quite the disparity right there. This means, though, what's the outcome of that? Well, it's going to be a likely pullback from developers and new projects, which will further dampen not only the construction industry and the people employed there, but of course, future developments. So overall, right now, Canada has seen inventory claw back from the 2022 lows of only 95,000 listings across the entire country. We're now up to 150,000 active inventory in Canada. That's a 50% increase. Bravo. But before you get too excited about that increase, do note we are still 40% below the levels we saw from 2010 to 2015, where it was averaging about 250,000 active listings in the country. So what does that mean? It means today we're about 100,000 less inventory than 9 years ago, with 5 million more people in the country. So a huge disparity there, and reminds us of, what was it, the CMHC report that said we need 4 million new homes today. And this kind of speaks to the numbers and why those that many homes are needed.
I think more than anything, Dan, I'm growing more and more frustrated, but also growing more and more disappointed. The more we look as around the world to see what other countries are doing, the more they're using their resources for energy, the more we're getting taxed on our resources, not even to use the energy that we have. We've got a new gas tax that's coming in. I wonder if they're going to take the price of gas out of the CPI basket when they put a new tax in. It's just like they're doing with interest rates on housing. We're one of the only places in the world that does this. Why? Because it's fitting a narrative. None of this is adding up to a healthy, prosperous, forward-looking country. This is all of the ugly problems and things that have been neglected or just not even, well, neglected is a decent word, not even looked at. Over the course of the last 5 to 8 years, where these problems have mounted and mounted and mounted, and we're just dealing with the symptoms, trying to throw a new tax at here and trying to stop people from doing this over here, as opposed to liberating the supply side and encouraging development and encouraging ways of making this country a better place. It's losing its allure to, I think, people around the world, and that's being reflected in data. And the underlying cracks that we're seeing in our economy, I think, are much bigger than what we're being told. It's not adding up to a very positive message. And to me, it's quite concerning.
The biggest metric that stands out to me is the fact that we are currently the most taxed as a country we've ever been, and yet the government is running at the highest deficit they've ever operated at. That does not add up. That is some bad math. That's it for this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Next week, we are going to have the March stats out for you for Vancouver, and we will go through all of what happened there, and I'll give you some insight. Prices are going up for sure. You're going to see HPI up. You're going to see average up. You're going to see medium up, and maybe to a higher degree than most are expecting. Either way, we will deep dive, share all that information with you. For now, have a great Easter long weekend, and we look forward to having you back next week. Thanks.
That wraps up this edition of the Vancouver Life Podcast.
For more information on this podcast and to access a ton of free downloads, investment opportunities, current market info, and homes for sale, you can find it all at www.thevancouverlife.com.
Thanks, and we look forward to bringing you more podcasts about Vancouver real estate.